Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman and Steve Jordahl, and we thank you for joining us here. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. How you doing?
Doing well for this Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yes, some bad weather coming to...
That's what I see, yeah. It's tonight and into tomorrow.
Well, for a significant part of the country, right?
Well, I know it is in the south, and I just looked at the weather app for where I live and where I work, and it's coming.
That's all you care about.
I don't care about anybody else.
It's the weather over your head.
How is it going to affect me?
Let's see here what we got here tomorrow. Okay, strong thunderstorms likely, damaging winds, large hail, and possibly a tornado with some storms. Other than that, it seems like a good day.
Yeah. Break out the bathing suit and suntan lotion.
This is for Tupelo, but I bet this is for a lot of part of the country. This bad weather system is going to move through. Mm. But, you know, you never see them say small hail.
Good point.
The Weather Channel.
If you're going to say small hail, you might as well not even
They don't
it.
Even mention that. Mm. They always say damaging winds, large hail, and possibly a tornado. And usually they say isolated tornadoes. Which I always ask my wife, as opposed to what, a cluster?
Well, there are such things.
We've got a cluster of tornadoes coming through at 3 o'clock this afternoon. I mean,
unfortunately, there are such a thing as, I mean, a storm can produce
a cluster, but you just never see that anyway.
Colorado has a whole lot. I don't want to talk all the way about Colorado weather all the time, but sometimes they have hail to the point where it's small hail, but it congregates. It looks like snow feet deep on the ground.
I remember
going looking at this. I mean, it literally was a foot of hail, small hail gathered on roofs and on the lawn.
Yeah,
just incredible amount of hail. Yeah.
Well, anyway, large hail. You know who hates to see that worse than anybody?
Insurance agencies and car dealers.
The car dealership.
Yeah.
Huh? You know, you hate to see because of... All right, Steve.
Yes, sir.
Give us your ray of sunshine to start today. Go ahead, Steve.
I heard you guys the first hour, of course, talking about the shootings in Atlanta and in Boulder, tragic shootings. And how race was being made an issue. And I thought it was interesting because one of the narratives that you're getting out of this and one of the narratives we saw in those people who tweeted out about the Boulder shooting before they knew that the guy was named Ahmad or Ahmed was that this guy was white because white men do all the mass shootings. Reporter Andy Ngo has been on the front lines of the Portland riots and the Antifa thing. He's been all over that unrest. He's a good quality reporter, very respected. And he went and looked up pictures of all of the mass shooters as defined by as four or more shot in a single incident, all the mass shooters in 2019. And there's way, way too many of them, but they're certainly not all white. We posted this tweet, and you can see the pictures on our Facebook page, the Today's Issues Facebook page.
They look all about male, though.
Yeah, I saw there's about three women in there.
Of how many mass? How many is this? About 50? About 100. He's got 100 of them pictured.
Yeah.
His point is to say that the narrative that it's white males who are doing all the mass shootings is not true.
That's correct.
That's
it's
his point.
Not true.
Those are just the only ones that the media is covering.
Mass shootings would be defined as four or more people dead?
Four or more people dead in a single incident.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, this is for the U.S.? He's got them right here?
That's right. In 1 year.
I'm looking at this. I would guess males would be more. It's almost all male. I don't know why I'm drifting into the speculation except to say, alcohol use, probably drug use, and or the testosterone.
Some of these, at least one of these, is obviously gang member because he's flashing the gang sign in the picture. The bottom of the second page there.
Well, you got, but it's a mix of whites, blacks. I don't see many, a few maybe Hispanics. But you know what? Let's just cut to the chase. Your skin color has nothing to do with whether you're a good person or a bad person.
Correct.
Nothing.
Absolutely.
To do. So to look at it that way is ridiculous, quite frankly. Now, environmental conditions of maybe your childhood, for example, and how you're raised does have an impact on how on the statistical numbers when it comes to crime. For example, I think it's close to 50% of all violent crimes are done by African-American males, or close, something like that, who represent only 6% of the public.
But then that gets into not their skin color. That gets into many of them grew up in fatherless homes.
No, that's my point.
With broken
families. I'm not saying that black males are inherently violent because of their skin color or their ethnicity or because... No,
right.
That's my point.
Right.
My point is, why do you have a problem with violence, so much violence in that category I just mentioned, that is young black males, maybe 15 to 30 years old? Why do you see so much crime there? And you're talking about almost 50% committed by 3% of the public? You have to say, what in the world is going on there? Well, it's for the reasons you just mentioned, Walker. When you have 70%+ of these young boys growing up without dads in their home, they have no many of them have no guidance. They're left to fend for themselves. They get involved in crime. They get involved in gangs. They drop out of school. And then you have what you see.
Yes. You have a sin problem.
You have the statistics that I mentioned. Yeah. So it has nothing to do with their skin color.
Yeah.
If you were to say to me, okay, 73% of all white boys grow up in homes without dads, then guess what? You would see the statistics soar among those boys getting involved in gangs and crime, dropping out of school, all the things that come with the breakup of the family.
Yeah. And our point all along, and that's basically why the ministry here exists, is to get to the root of the problem, which is a heart problem. And that's why we have the Marriage Family Life Conference. We have the In His Image documentary. We have the Bible teaching on the radio network. All these things we do are aimed at fixing the heart problem and the sin problem and not focusing on people's skin color.
So if these civil rights leaders and the folks who talk on racial topics, if they would spend half the time trying to rebuild the African-American family in this country, that's where you get the most bang for your buck.
Yeah.
Because then you would see the crime levels go way down among African-American males in particular if the marriage became again an important part of the African-American.
And do you remember how
community.
It got this way?
Marriage and family.
Do you remember how it got this way with fatherlessness in the African-American community? You know, in the 1940s and early 50s, the rate of unwed mothers, the rate of divorce was fairly similar between white
and...
It was the same between white and black. And then with the Great Society that Johnson did, all of a sudden, there's a lot of money coming out, and you get more money if you're a single mom than you do if you're married.
Well, that's what happened.
It was a disincentive. And in fact, I heard, and I can't corroborate this, so probably shouldn't even say it, but I heard that there were people from the government in the day going back and knocking on doors and saying, if you want money, you know, all you got to do is just separate, or say you're divorced. You could still live together.
Yeah.
You could still be married, but just say you're divorced and you can get more money. Well, once the paper says divorced, that's a... You know,
no, the federal government created generational welfare.
It did,
and
yes.
Generational welfare dependency. The federal government did that in the mid-60s, and that's what happened. And I don't know how you break that. I'm not sure exactly.
Somebody's got to be the bad guy and say we're going to wean this country off of social welfare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're listening to Today's Issues on AFR. Next story, Steve.
Well, the cabinet is being picked as we speak, President Biden's cabinet. And in the wake of the shooting in Atlanta, when all these Asian American women, six Asian American women and two white women were killed, all of a sudden the minority du jour, the minority that is the most oppressed, has become the AAPI minority. Now, had you ever heard of AAPI before?
Well, they tried to get me to pay my dues, but I just. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I did think AARP when he first said
right?
that.
AAPI stands for Asian American Pacific Islander. They're grouping these people together as broadly
Asian.
It sounds
like an airline.
This identity stuff is exhausting. Mentally.
Well, it is.
I know. Here we go. Here we go again. So we got the who now?
Two U.S. senators, Senator Tammy Duckworth from Illinois and Senator Mazie Hirono from Hawaii, both of whom are Asian, said to the Biden administration, quote, there's no AAPI representation in the cabinet. There's not a single AAPI in the cabinet position. That's not acceptable. That's what I told the White House. I've been talking to them for months, and they're still not aggressive. So I'm going to be voting for any nominee. Sorry. I'm not going to be voting for any nominee from the White House other than diversity nominees. Doesn't matter if they're qualified.
Well, so you got these two U.S. senators, one from Illinois, one from Hawaii, say they're upset that the Biden administration hasn't appointed one of their own.
An Asian American to his cabinet.
Well,
by the way,
Asian American what now? What's the other two letters?
Pacific Islander. So it would be, from Bali, from Guam or...
Okay, unless Biden does that, they're voting no on any more nominees?
They have to be diversity nominees. If they're gay, that's fine. If they're women, well, they're a minority. That's fine. If they're black, that's good. We're just not going to vote for any white men, probably white people. They have, by the way, both of these, they had a talk with the White House, laid down the law with Biden, who said, first of all, where is Asia? And then he said, okay, I will.
You jest.
I adjust. But he said that he's going to make it a priority. And so that now they say they're going to release his nominees. But you know what? I did a little calculation. Asian American Pacific Islanders make up 5.6% of America. There are 15 cabinet positions. 5.6% of 15 is 0.84. So 0.8 of one person should be...
That's going to be hard to function, though.
I know.
You're missing a leg.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Or
yeah.
An arm. You got to find that person.
Yeah. Well, it'd be easier to find somebody that's missing half a brain in that group.
Well, that's Biden's problem. They're the ones that created this.
This is a disaster because you talk about I read where one of the Pentagon appointments is going to be nixed.
Yeah.
If they follow this quote standard, then at least half of Biden's nominees won't qualify. They'll just be held up in the Senate because of their skin color.
I think Biden's going to throw a token Asian American at them, and they'll be fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's kind of harsh.
But that's a big – I mean, this is terrible to begin with, but to say I'm not voting for anyone that is not a minority is unheard of.
I thought they said that it's not an Asian American island Pacific.
Well, no. What the
Pacific Island?
I'm not going to be voting for any nominee from the White House other than diversity nominees.
Basically, everybody but white people.
Yeah.
And if you've been watching the news lately and noting who President Biden has been appointing or nominating, they're almost all
you like how
some
they've
kind
said,
of diversity.
You like how they've said we're only going to vote for diversity nominees except for white people.
Yeah.
Which means we're going to discriminate against people because they're skin colored.
That's
not diverse.
Well, one of the two remaining people or Biden's groups you can discriminate against.
If you want to just go on a variety of colors and ethnicities and people of various backgrounds, Biden's got he's got a United Nations going on parade. That's his administration right now. But So these two U.S. senators have laid the ultimatum down.
They did, and the Biden, according to them, the Biden administration agreed with them, and
we'll see what happens there.
Kamala Harris, our vice president, is getting a little bit of hot water. There is a tradition. You may have seen it with President Bush. I think President Obama, President Biden. All of these people, when they are exiting or entering their Air Force One, Marine One, any building that's guarded by our brave soldiers, they salute. The soldiers automatically salute their commander-in-chief, and the commander-in-chief salutes back. Kamala Harris doesn't salute. She was walking up, they have a video of her walking up the steps of Air Force One. The military protection, representative snapped to attention.
Air Force.
Yeah, and salute. And she just walks right by them as if they're not there.
She's not the commander-in-chief, though. Does that matter?
So she's the second in command.
She's in the line.
Pence saluted.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I'm just asking the question. She's not the commander-in-chief.
Yeah, at first I thought, well, is this a one-off? You know, she forgot. Because if you're boarding 10 times a day, sometimes you forget. But this is repeated. I mean, she hasn't saluted, from my understanding, for weeks.
Really? Well, many on the left don't respect the military.
Right.
Huh? So, I mean, that's not uncommon on the left.
Started with Reagan, according to Fox News.
And here's my let me interpret this for the left. Let me speak for the left. If they were to have to give a defense,
you speak
for this.
from the left. Walker. You give it to us.
No swear words. Okay?
Here's the woke explanation we're going to get. I'll guarantee it. If she gets questioned on this, the left is going to say, "We have the first female vice president of a minority descent, and the last thing she's going to do is salute the white males standing at the bottom of the steps of Air Force Two."
Oh, goodness. You think that's what we're going to hear? Okay.
If you follow their logic,
yeah,
that's where you end up. I don't know if that's why she's not doing it, but nonetheless, it's disrespectful.
Right.
She might also say it was a very windy day.
Yeah, that's right. You've got to hold on to the railing.
And then she might chuckle after that and laugh about why she's not going to the border.
I don't know.
I'm not saluting today.
Okay. I don't know. All right. I better move on.
All right.
I'm headed in the wrong direction.
You know that the CDC has relaxed the guidance for schools?
From 6 feet to three?
From 6 feet to three. And they're realizing, which they've been being told all along, that kids are not really primary movers with this virus. And they're fairly safe. And they can't spread it. They can't get it for the most part. And so we got to get the schools back open, because it's a disaster having the kids at home. It has been shown to be a social disaster. But you know who's resisting? Take a guess. Yeah.
I don't know. Who? Kamala Harris?
The teachers' union is saying, no, even 3 feet. Now, it's still not enough. If our teachers can get this deadly disease and
never
we're not
enough,
putting them
Steve.
In.
Never enough.
Never enough. I want you to hear what Brett Hume had to say about this. This is cut four.
The rationale for keeping schools closed has never made any sense to start with. And now, at this stage, with cases declining, and we know more and more now about how safely kids can be in schools and how close they can sit together and all the rest of it, it makes no sense whatsoever. And I don't see how parents can escape the conclusion that what these teachers' unions are doing now is trying to continue a situation where these teachers don't have to work and are getting paid. It's a pretty good deal for them, if you think of it, but it's a terrible deal for kids.
There you go.
Well, I agree with him.
Yeah.
On that. It's really up to, I guess this is varying all over the country, how much the schools are closed.
Yeah, still. I tell you what could probably be done. You know, most of this falls at the district level, the school district level, superintendent. Yeah. But, you know, if you've got a governor like DeSantis, and I think he's done this, if you're a governor and you want the schools open, I would just tell these districts that aren't open, you're not getting any more state educational funds till you open your schools.
Right, it's been a year now.
Yeah, and you talk about opening quick.
Yeah.
That would open quick, because all of these teachers are paid through the state payroll system.
Where are schools still closed? Are there schools still closed in the country?
The usual suspects, California and New York, I think they're opening their schools slowly. But
yeah, if they're not closed, they're pulling.
What about Chicago?
They're pulling this one day a week, and they're saying they're open. Or the half days.
I mean, I'm sorry. I know there are people yelling at the radio going, "We're closed here." I just don't know. you hear, I know the blue, a lot of the blue states, the schools.
Well, the Chicago Teachers Union, what did they just open like a month ago? Remember they were having that spat with the mayor, the unions?
Right.
With Lightfoot?
But our schools here in Mississippi have been open for a long time.
Most of them. I think most I've heard all, of some schools.
Most in, all of them.
I think I've heard of some schools in the Delta that still aren't open.
I think that's true of a lot of red states.
This is as of March 1, 1980. These are the schools with full closures. Is just Puerto Rico. Partial closures in effect in Hawaii, California, New Mexico, D.C., and Delaware. The states that have been ordered open, Iowa, Arizona, Texas, and Florida. West Virginia has some grades reopening, others not. The rest of the states have no orders necessarily in effect, which means it's down to the
particular, as it should be.
Yeah.
It's not a statewide thing.
Each district is making their own decision.
The more local the decision, the better.
Yeah.
On that. But anyway, I just wonder, we're going to have to see the effects of these school closures on the academic progress of the students, which it's not going to be pretty. When the results are in, I don't think.
Talk about missing basically missing a year.
A lot of them, if they've been closed, they missed a year. That Zoom stuff worked for about 3 days.
Yeah.
Huh? If that.
And that's if they're watching a video.
Yeah. And now a lot of people switched over to homeschooling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard of that.
You know,
and private schools.
It's going to be interesting. In fact, I know that you mentioned it. It might be something I want to give a call in the newsroom to someone like the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, see how this pandemic has affected homeschooling and what's like the last pass the pandemic.
I'll guarantee the numbers have gone up.
Some people have discovered it, and I think they really like the difference.
Maybe about double digits.
I don't know.
Percentage standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. But I guess I'm still surprised a little bit that you would be getting paid a year and not having to go into work, any job. But that's the case.
Got a union.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, go ahead.
I want to just end with some good news. At the University of Iowa, there's a Christian group called Business Leaders in Christ. They wanted to open a student group, but the University of Iowa said, no, not if you're going to have a rule that says your leaders have to be Christians, goodness sakes. Well, they went to court, and the Beckett Law, which is a nonprofit legal firm representing Christians, religious freedom, has won their case because all the other student groups, the Muslim student groups and the Jewish student groups, were allowed to have Muslims and Jews as their head, but Christians, for some reason, were being singled out. So now at the University of Iowa, Christian groups can ask and demand that their leaders observe the faith.
Good.
Now they admit anybody into the club. If you can join, you can attend the meetings and join the club. Yeah. If you're an atheist, if you want to,
you just can't be a leader.
You just can't be a leader.
So the University of Iowa, correct me if I'm wrong, tried to punish a Christian group for having their standards be that only Christians can lead their Christian group.
Yep.
But Iowa University of Iowa lost, and the Christian group won. That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
In court.
And the court, the Eighth Circuit, said that the officials who kicked the group off of campus because of its faith can be held personally accountable for the harm they caused.
Good.
All right.
Thanks to the Beckett Fund.
Yeah.
Thank you, Steve.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Walker.
Yes, sir.
Thanks to Fred Jackson, Abraham Hamilton. Who else was on with us today? Laura Perry, Brent Creeley, our producer, and we thank you for listening to today's issues here on American Family Radio. We hope you'll stay with us throughout the day. And we'll see you back tomorrow, everybody.